Thursday, March 22nd, 1 o'clock. The first item of business today is House Memorial 10, House Joint Memorial 10. Mr.
Yes, sir. House Joint Memorial 10 urges the President of the United States and Congress to remove the provisions of federal law that disqualify veteran mortgage bonds from tax-exempt status if the bond proceeds are used for acquiring or replacing existing mortgages.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. And we have Mr. Patterson sign to testify. And please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Ed Patterson. I'm here representing myself. I'd like to thank you for having this hearing on this memorial today, and I'd like to thank Representative Boquist for introducing this measure on my behalf. I appreciate that. My oldest daughter spent 10 years on active duty in the U.S. Army. During that time, she met and married another active duty soldier. Their two sons were born as Army brats, and shortly after their youngest was born, they decided to try civilian life and move to Tualatin. She recently went through a divorce after her husband of 18 years walked out on her and her two teenage sons. She was awarded sole custody of the 14 and 16-year-old, who are now freshmen and a junior at Tualatin High School. To lessen some of the trauma for the boys, she wanted to keep the family home until they graduated from high school. She was awarded their house and the divorce settlement. I had been advising her since that time on their financial affairs and suggested that she refinance the home through the Oregon Veterans Loan Program. Much to my chagrin, she learned that although she did qualify for an Oregon Veterans mortgage loan, she did not qualify for a refinancing of the loan. I explained the dilemma to Representative Boquist, who made some inquiries on her behalf. He found that Public Law 99-514 prohibits the five state veterans loan programs from granting refinancing home loans. The only course of action available to us is to ask Congress to recognize this type of situation and change the federal law. It is ironic and nonsensical that a veteran can qualify for a loan to buy another home but cannot refinance an existing home. I urge the committee to adopt the memorial and recommend a due pass to the House of Representatives. Perhaps some divorced veteran in the future will be in a similar situation, and the Oregon Veterans Loan Program could come to his or her assistance. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Are there any questions in the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that personal story. Helps, make sense. Sometimes you get these bills and they're, you don't know what they're addressing, trying to take care of, and that really puts a human face on it.
Good.
We appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
That's why it's late.
Okay. I'll close it. Is there anybody else testifying that bill? Okay, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Val Conley. I am Administrator of Veterans Services Division for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of HJM 10. As some of you may know, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs used to have the ability to do refinance loans many, many years ago. With the Mortgage Subsidy Bond Tax Act of, I believe it was 1979 or 1980, we did lose the ability to be able to refinance current loans. Since that time, we've had numerous inquiries for veterans who are already into a home to refinance that home through the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to get the preferred veterans rate. So we've had to turn many, many people away, such as Mr. Patterson's daughter and people similar to her. So we are here to support HJM 10. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so.
There be any questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. This came up in Veterans Committee last session, and we sent letters to Congress, same thing along the line. This has been an ongoing multiple state issue to try and get them, but they just haven't got around to it in Congress yet.
Yeah, not a top priority.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Ms. Conley. Close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 10 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 10.
Mr. Chair,
I have a motion.
I move to adopt House Joint Memorial 10 and recommend passage to the House floor.
Thank you. Representative Shoffler moves passage of House Joint Memorial 10 and with the due pass to the floor. Are there any questions?
I just want to apologize for being late.
That's okay.
Mr. Chairman.
It's not accepted.
Call the roll, please.
Representative
Belquist?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
And Chair Barker?
Aye. Thank you. The measure passes, and Representative Belquist, could I secure that, please? Thank you. Okay, open a public hearing on House Bill 3159. Mr. Keller, if you could give us an explanation, please.
Yes, sir. House Bill 3159 allows certain veterans to receive state aid for course of study or professional training and federal educational aid concurrently, allows electronic transfer of state aid, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. And I have two people signed up, General Caldwell and Ms. Conley again. It's probably both come up together if that's all for you.
Good afternoon again, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Val Conley, Administrator of Veterans Services Division for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. This bill would permit Oregon Educational Aid beneficiaries to receive payments concurrent with educational payments under any federal act based upon their service in the armed forces. Currently, Oregon Educational Aid beneficiaries receive payments or benefits only if they are not receiving educational aid under any federal act based upon prior service in the armed forces. This program falls tremendously short of providing the financial assistance needed by these qualified veterans to meet their educational obligations, allowing them to receive the small payment to which they are entitled through Oregon's program at the same time as they are receiving educational aid under any federal act will allow the Oregon educational aid benefit to supplement the federal monies that they receive. The largest bulk of Oregon veterans, approximately 66%, are those who served during World War II, Korea, and the Vietnam era. The youngest veterans in this group are now in their 50s, and the majority of them are no longer looking to further their educations. Currently, there are approximately 30 veterans statewide utilizing the Oregon Educational Aid Program for veterans. This program pays $150 per month for full-time undergraduate college studies. This was increased from $50 per month last session. The objectives for removing the limitations on this program are threefold. This change would allow many more Oregon veterans to avail themselves of this program in a way which is much more beneficial to them and their futures. With the increasing costs of attending college, this change will assist in offsetting these increased expenses. This change will also enhance their federal educational entitlements. This concludes my testimony on House Bill 3159. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anybody have any questions? Do you have any estimate of how many veterans would able to take advantage of this?
Chair Barker, the best numbers I have are a report from the federal VA for 2005. At that time, they had approximately 4,600 veterans going to school under the GI Bill.
Okay. Thank you. General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to express our support for this particular piece of legislation. I think it's clearly within the state's best interest and good public policy to pass this legislation.
Okay. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else testify on this bill? I think so. Okay, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3159 with a due pass recommendation to the House floor.
Representative Shoffler has moved House Bill 3159 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? If the assistant could call the roll, please.
Representative Belquist?
Yes.
Representative Cowan?
Yes.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Okay. House Bill 3159 passes. Representative Scott, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2400. And Mr. McDonald, please.
For the record, my name is Mac McDonald, representing United Veterans of Oregon. 2400 basically is a good bill, except in when we come to Dash 3, we talk about psychiatrists. I think the psychiatrist is meant mainly for troops coming back from overseas today, not for persons in the veterans' homes. So we're mixing apples and oranges. And the part of it that requires that the psychiatrist be a military veteran, there just aren't that many in this country. And I think that requirement should be dropped, because it's better to see a psychiatrist than no psychiatrist. And the way this bill is written, I'm afraid that the veterans are going to see no psychiatrist whatsoever if that requirement is still in. Okay. My suggestion would be to take from line 3, where it starts, the credit provided, through line 13 on dash 3 out, and maybe put it at the end of the bill, and you can have the psychiatrist in there for veterans, period. Not veterans home, for veterans. And that would cover the whole state. But the way it's written right now, I don't think it's acceptable.
Okay, are there any questions from the committee? I just would say, besides the difficulty in finding somebody, it's been my experience, and I used to, at one time, served on the disability board of the Portland Police and Fire, and we used mental health workers who are not police or fire, and they were able to do a good job, and I think you're right that that is a problem with this one. So thank you for your testimony. Okay. See, with no further testimony, I'll close the public hearing on that, and I'll direct Mr. Keller, if you could come up with some dash fours. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. McDonald. Over the public hearing on House Bill 2771.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2771 authorizes the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to issue hunting and angling licenses at no charge to Oregon residents who are active members or veterans of the Armed Forces of the United States. We have a dash one amendment that was submitted by Representative Wisnett. It would change the fee to 50% for the annual resident spouse or dependent child under their age of 18. Of an active member of the Armed Forces, and for recipients of the Congressional Medal of Honor, the hunting license and angling license would be free.
Sorry, what was the last part again?
The recipient of a Congressional Medal of Honor.
Thank you. Okay. General Caldwell, I'm going to come up first.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Reagan Military Department, and give you a little historical background. Last session, this body, this committee actually, and then the legislature as a whole, went down this path to try to provide no-cost hunting and fishing licenses to members of the armed services, to include the National Guard and Reserve. And I will tell you that it's a big issue with soldiers. They prefer this. They like this. If you send a survey out, which we have, the number one item seems to always be this. Now, having said that, the way that we ended up having to construct the process was that
soldiers would go out and buy their hunting and fishing, or not their hunting and fishing license, they would get the license to hunt or fish, a combination, and then submit for reimbursement through us, and that way the ODFW managed to get their fees. Otherwise, it became a little bit unworkable, a little bit difficult. I think if you look at the record, we've spent $65,000. We estimated $350,000 would be spent, and this includes all services, all reservists, all guardsmen. And so the fact of the matter is not a lot of people took, as many as reported in the survey said they would, a lot of them took advantage of this. And I think probably because of the system we had to set up in order to make sure ODFW got their license fees was probably part of the issue. I'm not here to tell you how to do this. I'm just here to tell you that it certainly is a big issue with most members of the armed forces, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions in general?
Okay, thank you, General.
Ray Elliker and Laurie Byerly.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker. I'm the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Ms. Laurie Byerly, also Deputy Director of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Administrative Services, and I'm Program Services. Just wanted to present, our written testimony lays out the cost to the agency of the original bill. Not the amendment, which we can speak to. We're prepared to speak to the amendment, but we weren't sure where that was in the process. So we went ahead and brought back our original testimony. It does show a substantial revenue loss for the biennium, approximately $4.5 million other funds, based on the way the bill currently is written. In addition, it impacts probably to over tune of $500,000 our federal matching funds, which come from excise taxes on fishing gear, boating gas, sporting arms, ammunition. So anyway, we've laid out as best we could just a pretty simple chart there at the bottom of page one. And anyway, that really ends our prepared testimony, Mr. Chair, but certainly prepared to talk about the impacts in the revenue and can talk to the amendment as well.
Okay. Well, would the amendments essentially cut those numbers in half?
Quite a lot.
The lost number.
For the record, I'm Laurie Byerly, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Chair Barker, it does impact the revenue. To clarify something that General Caldwell said earlier, we also interpreted the amendment to mean that veterans would pay half price instead of free. That was an additional piece. Based on that and the same types of assumptions we used in the original fiscal impact, we estimated to be a hit of about $2.3 million to our other funds revenue over the course of a biennium. There would be a much smaller effect on our federal match because we would continue to get some dollars into match against those federal amounts. So about $2.3 million a biennium is what we would estimate the revenue impact to be.
Okay. Are there any questions from the...
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a question. Yeah, right. What this kind of cut is a substantial loss in resources for your department. What would you do if this reduction came about? And another question to follow up with that is, some argue that if you hand out the license, people will go out and buy more stuff and we'll get more revenue. You want to just go to those two?
Chair Barker, Representative Schaffler, as to your first question, and we talked about this a little bit at the top of page two, that because this would be a serious reduction in revenue, it would probably mean more than just trying to deal with it and an ending balance problem. It would probably cause us to take a look at, and I couldn't predict right now how in the end that we would absorb this, but probably served as some impact on current program level as well as ending balance. Again, as to the second question, that maybe if you start them out with a free license, then they'll buy more big game tags or angling harvest tags or things like that. I guess I'm not an economist, and I don't know how to respond to that one. I don't know whether that would be true or not.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roy, could you kind of respond? I mean, last time we said 350. How much did we purchase last time from the military department? 350? 350,000?
No, they claimed that. I think they said there was only 65 used.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. We actually put that in, and now it's in the ending balance in the rainy day fund, or shortly to be. But of that $350,000, we used $65,000, which meant either our estimate was off, and there's no two ways about it, that when we actually left this committee last session, we thought it was going to be part of Fish and Wildlife's implementation, and then when it got to Ways and Means, it became part of the military department's implementation, and so it was kind of difficult. But, you know, if we had the original estimate of $350,000, we actually spent $65,000. I guess I'd like you to comment on how we see that differential now and in our present numbers. And the second thing, you know, to the positive side, if there was money put against a program like this, say we'll just take $65,000 as the last number or $100,000 as the number, is there a way to structure the program in a drawdown count, much like we do points and everything else, that on a first-come, first-served basis it was drawn down out of a set account? Can you comment something along that line?
Chair Barker, Representative Boquist. I'd like to address your first question about the differences in the program. The way I do understand it, in the current biennium, the process of someone going and purchasing and receiving reimbursement is rather cumbersome, and I think that's one of the reasons participation has not been as high as been anticipated. But also, in the current biennium, the program is much more limited into who's eligible. It's all active duty members, and in the veteran side of the equation, it's only veterans who've been discharged within the last 12 months. So the population that is eligible for the program is much narrower than in this bill as originally drafted. So that's one component. As to your second question, I do believe it's possible that we could manage a program differently. I would be a little concerned about a first-come, first-serve type of situation in trying to deal with folks who maybe, because they were overseas perhaps, didn't have the access that someone stateside might have in trying to get in and get that license. We'd have to really look at the rules around that and try to figure out how we could deal with folks equitably. But I believe we could probably come up with some kind of program if we had the appropriate funding to work with folks and maybe make the process a little simpler for them to get a free license.
Let's go. Please.
Chair Barker, Representative Boquist, one other thing that comes to mind, hearing Lori talk about the state side or if the soldier is overseas, is that probably in the next 6 months we're going to go in a much more active way into internet sales of our license and tags. And you might then see participation rate increase based on that. Because right now to buy a hunting and fishing license in Oregon, you really have to be in Oregon and go to a vendor or to one of our offices to do that. Unlike some other states which are ahead of us in kind of internet sales of their kind of licensed and hunting tags and licenses. But we are just beginning into a new point of, what we call a point of sale system, whole new system that is up and running in other states. And we will have a much more, the public and our customers can have a much more opportunity to use the internet to purchase a hunting and fishing license or tags and those kinds of things. That might increase participation. I thought maybe I should just mention that.
Yes. A follow-up, Mr. Chair, and along with Representative Schaffler's question. We're talking 94,000 potential participants here. And there's two ways to look at this, I guess half full, half empty. If there's 91,000 new individuals, then it brings in more revenue, so on and so forth like that, and it could be economically determined. I did take economics in college, by the way, and in a master's program. It could be a benefit. But of the 91,000 number you have here, what percentage, just wild guess, not held to it, do you think would actually be new people who would take advantage of this and then go in and purchase other things? And how much of the 91,000 would be simply replacing people who already hunt and fish and now they're going to get a discount?
Sure. Chair Barker, Representative Boquist. The way we came up with the $91,000 or count on here is we took the amount, the number of veterans in the state, and we took an estimate of the number of active duty Oregonians right now. Mm-hmm. And of that total, which is about 380,000 people. Mm-hmm. We applied the same percentage rate of Oregonians that currently participate in hunting and fishing. We have that data. We know out of the Oregon population what percentage of folks actually come and purchase a hunting and fishing license. Mm-hmm. We applied that percentage to that population to come up with this $91,000 amount. From my perspective, that's a low-end estimate because I believe the participants in this group, because of their interest in hunting and fishing and their desire to get the free licenses, are probably a more active group than the general population. So I think some of these folks, I think our number's a little low as far as potential impact. But on your question of do we know if these are existing purchasers or new ones, we don't have that data. We don't collect who's a veteran or who's armed forces member when we ask for that license information. I think there's some crossover there, but I do think it's an active population, and we would see some kind of a revenue effect from a change to free changing free licenses.
Okay, thank you, Representative Scott.
So, thank you for the ability to ask the question. So if we were, and obviously there's interest in providing this program, and we see the potential of the estimated financial impact if it's reduced to the 50% of about $2.3 million. What solutions are available that you could pursue to reduce your agency's impact of those financial losses if we move forward with this? Can you think of a source or a resource that may allow you to recoup some or all of those funds without impacting, as occurred last session, I think, from the veterans or from the military budget to reimburse on a basis? So do you have any strategize? Do you have any ways of trying to recoup that?
Chair Barker, Representative Scott, just so I'm clear, I believe in the current biennium, the money was actually appropriated to military, $350,000 general fund, to support the licenses, so they didn't have to take existing resources to provide the reimbursement.
Right.
So that, again, would be one other course of action, you know, if you could find general fund to help support a piece of the program. Unfortunately, the first thing that comes to my mind is as we look ahead, what happens not only with any free license program. We do have some existing programs, for example, the Pioneer License Program, where we provide free licenses to certain eligible members of the Oregon population. We are already, you know, losing some revenue source there, and unfortunately, that's been mostly being made up by other fee payers. So our other license holders, you know, the cost, the price they're paying for their permits and fees and tags and licenses is some, to a certain extent, covering what we're losing out on the other revenue side. We don't have any plans in the current biennium to look at fee increases. However, we are going to be looking ahead in the next biennium and doing a rather comprehensive review of all our fees and licenses to try and figure out what levels we need to set those at in 2009-11. Not that I want to necessarily put more burden on those other fee payers, but if we were to look at additional free licenses, maybe the time at which to address that issue is at the time that we're actually looking at our entire fee structure and try to balance that out with our other needs. As far as any other revenue source out there that we could pull in, I can't off the top of my head think of any other mechanism to bring in additional revenue to cover the program.
Thank you for your response. You know, I think that this is an important enough issue, and I think that it has enough merit that if the agency, and I'm not asking them to suffer the entire consequences of a $2.3 million hit, and I don't like the reimbursement, I think that that probably proved to not be a very successful program. No intentions meant, but, you know, I think that's the reality of how it came. I would like to see us recommend and pass this and challenge that, you know, the general fund dollars just need to be inserted to cover this if the agency can't sustain those losses. Then I think that as good Oregonians and as much as this committee, and I'm fairly confident seeing the participation at the level of this committee knows and warrants the recognition of this, that for $2.3 million, that would just be sending a real strong message of how we value the veterans and what we think of that, that I would sure be wanting our committee to ask and insist upon and maybe insert it in here that it be reimbursed from general fund dollars.
Thank you. Any further comments? This bill would have a referral to Ways and Means. And
well, it doesn't necessarily have to. We've seen many this session that don't necessarily have that referral, and it's my understanding that it's at the discretion of the speaker. There has been no limit set as to what receives referral for general fund dollars, so we don't have to refer it to
it. Well, I would expect the 2.3.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't have to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
There's no limit set on it, and when I asked the question, it was very specific that there's no limit set on that. So we could just pass it out of here to the floor with the 2.3.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no problem sending it off to Ways and Means. I don't think passing this off to the floor is a very good idea. And to the idea that we can do whatever we want, for example, the e-permitting bill did not go through Ways and Means, but that money will be in the DCBS budget and the building codes budget. So it will have a hearing. That's, I think, the confusion. Maybe the confusion's on my part of what goes to Ways and Means and what doesn't. This bill, Mr. Chair, if we want to send this on to Ways and Means and have these people take a look at it, and if they come up with $2.5 million to help give free fishing and hunting license to veterans, God bless them, more power to them. I think that, I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but I'm going to say it again, folks. There's limited resources in this state, and this is a big hit to this department, and I will not be supportive of this department taking this all on themselves unless we see a direct increase of somehow money coming back to fill it back up, because it's important that they be able to carry out their mission. So I once again, no problem sending it on to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, first of all, now, just so that I make sure I understand correctly, there currently a veteran with a disability of 25% or more is entitled to a free license. Is that correct?
Chair Barkperson Cowan, yes, that's correct.
Thank you, follow up. So this is a fairly significant extension and of the program, and I really am concerned about the fiscal impact, and I particularly don't want to see that kind of an impact come to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I don't think that with the size of their budget and the responsibilities we're asking of them right now that department can withstand that. So I, with respect, will have to be non-supportive of this.
Okay. Representative Scott, did you? Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to close. Representative Wilquist, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would ask, because I assume based on what we're doing here, we're not going to decide this today, but I would really like to know how much we bought for $65,000 and if we had the $350,000 left, because I did again take statistical analysis and I'm looking at the numbers here, and you know, any statistician would tell you 2 plus 2 isn't equaling 4 at this point, simply because I think it's too large of a number. The real impact is going to be smaller in some form or the other. And so I'd like to know at some point what $65,000 bought us and what $350,000 would have bought us, because I think there are options, and it is a question of priority of general fund dollar replacement, as Representative Scott said.
Yeah, thank you. And I just did a quick look at that. It's like 18% of the people, but having to go through a reimbursement problem might have deterred a lot of people from taking advantage of the program. Any further questions of the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2771, and we'll mull this around a little bit before we try to work it. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2938. Mr. Keller.
Thank you, sir. House Bill 2938 increases the amount of property tax exemption for disabled veterans and surviving spouses of war veterans to $25,000 of value of homestead or personal property. I have given the committee a copy of some background information that the committee requested related to the revenue impact of this program.
Thank you. Mr. McDonald and Kevin O'Reilly, come up with you today. I think we both are on the same page there. Yeah.
Mr. O'Reilly, you have a chance to join us.
My name is Matt McDonald, representing United Veterans of Oregon. In 1999, the amount for veterans was $11,670. The assessed value you could take off on the value of your house. It jumped to 3% a year since that time. I want to point out that house values have jumped probably 40 to 50% since that time. Therefore, this amount of money, which is at the present time $18,000, is woefully low compared to the rise in the value of homes. And with the rise in the value of homes, of course, the assessed value goes up and the veteran the homeowner pays much more money. The simple rise of $7,000 for a disabled veteran to $25,000 off in the assessed value of the house still does not cover the rapid rise in the valuation of homes in the state of Oregon. You go to buy a new home that maybe cost $20,000-$30,000 10 years ago, now is up in the $100,000-$200,000 bracket. Therefore, we request that the amount in the bill, as written, be approved. Do you have any questions? I'll be glad to answer them.
Okay, anybody have any questions? Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Mr. O'Reilly.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly, and I'm here today on behalf of the members of the Oregon Chapter of the Paralyzed Veterans of America, and we support House Bill 2938. Again, we urge the committee to consider lifting or increasing the income limits for non-service-connected disabled veterans and to increase the exemption amount for service-connected veterans to $50,000 or a percentage of the assessed value. We believe this will help our younger disabled veterans to better afford a home, assist our elderly veterans in staying in their homes, and help our disabled veterans with day-to-day costs associated with their disabilities. Representative Schaffler had some concerns last hearing on this bill, and I tried to look up some information. I realized the state was much bigger than I was, so I concentrated on one county. I called up Curry County to get a little information from them. Curry County has a veteran population of about 4,000, a little less than 4,000. That's 23% of the population over 18 years. That's higher than the national average of 18%. In Curry County, 463 veterans or their spouses, widows or widowers, use the property tax exemption. 17 of these are non-service-connected veterans, 40% or more disabled. 252 are the widows of non-service-connected veterans. That makes a total of 269 receiving tax relief at $15,450. 168 are service-connected veterans, and 26 are widows or widowers of these service-connected veterans, for a total of 109 receiving tax relief under the $18,540 level. In Curry County, the property tax ranges per $1,000 of assessed value from 5.8026 to $11.64. So I looked up a median and I call it about $8.72 and ran some numbers. Currently, a non-service connected veteran in Curry County using the median would receive a tax relief of $134.75. For the county, this means a loss in revenues of $36,247.75. That's rounded up a little bit. For the service connected veteran seeking tax relief, they receive about $161. To the county, this means $32,178.30 of tax relief, or revenues lost, I'm sorry. And hopefully I've done my math right, and I ran some more numbers. If we up that tax relief for the to do non-service-connected veterans is very difficult. They're not in the VA system, many of them. So how do you know who they are? So I left them out, and I just ran with the service-connected veterans. They're a lot easier to find. Using $25,000 of property tax exemption, the tax relief would go up to $218. to the county in lost revenues. This would, well, not lost revenues, tax relief for the veterans, $43,389 per for that total number of 199 veterans, I guess it is. If the exemption is at the $50,000 level, we would get $435 of tax relief to our service-connected veterans, and the county would have lost revenues of $86,580.92. These are just estimates and my speculation, and again, I'm not too sure my math is absolutely correct. While I was wandering around the internet, I went by the Department of Revenue, and I'm not too sure I'm reading their chart correctly, but it seems to me that Curry County had $18 million of property tax income last year. I don't know if that's true or not. It's just, that's the way I'm reading the chart here. So we're asking for $100,000 of lost revenues to the county of 18 million to help those veterans. Curry County is a smaller county, smaller population. I'm sure Multnomah County or Washington County has a higher level of, has more veterans living there, but they also have a higher population, bigger population. So,
higher value of homes too.
Yeah, and a higher value of homes in those counties. And again, it seems, and I don't use this property tax exemption. I never have, and I probably never will. That's a personal choice. But then I thought the other night, I was talking with my wife, and we're talking about retirement because we're getting older. And I thought, well, you know, I'm probably going to die before she is because I've had an unhealthy lifestyle. I smoke too much. I used to drink, that kind of thing. And when I pass, her income will be cut dramatically. And how can I help her? This tax relief would come in very useful for her. And as I'm, and I, again, not having used the tax exemption, I'm not too sure how it's gone over the years. I've only lived in the state now for about 10 years. But it would seem to me when it was first implemented, and back in the 50s, maybe even in the 40s, that tax exemption was probably a larger percentage of the value of the home, the tax assessed value. It might have been, someone once mentioned to me, it was as high as 50% of the assessed value. And I don't think it's kept up with the cost of housing in Oregon. And so that's a great big concern for us. If you've noticed, we're watching the housing market, it may have slowed down a little bit, but the cost of housing in this state is just, it's high. I was going to say ridiculous, but I shouldn't say that. It's going up fast. And I don't think in many places in the state a working class family can afford a home. I really don't think they can. Hopefully that'll change. Maybe the housing market will slow down enough and wages will catch up. But that's the impression I get right now. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Do my best. Any questions? Mr. Keller ran had some figures for us, and it would show that in the 2005-2007, there would be a loss of $13.7 million of assessed value. Am I reading that correct?
Yeah. Second page. Oh. I go back for some. I'm missing my second page here.
I'm sorry. In 2005-2006, there was $1 billion of exempted property, assessed value exempted. And the loss would result in $31.3 million, is what the numbers that we have here. Mr. Phelps, or I don't know if anybody have any questions for these?
Mr. Chairman, I might point out that's assessed value. That's not the amount of money that the veteran will get back, which is a big difference. We're not getting $7,000 back on each home. We're getting $7,000 off on the assessed value of that house,
right, okay.
Which only adds to couple hundred dollars.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Mr. Phillips, can you shine any light on this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. I can try to shed some light on it. Let me just say the Department of Revenue does not take a position on the policy of this bill or any of these kinds of bills, but if I can answer specific questions about what the bill might propose to do or what the effects have been. I was looking at the numbers, and the governor is required to present to the legislature every biennium a tax expenditure report. And in that report, we try to list every tax exemption or special assessment for income and property and all the other taxes. And in this case, we do report in our book that's presented a tax expenditure for this program. And it did start in 1921, actually. And we try to estimate for the upcoming biennium what the effects will be. We look at the 05-07 actual effects, and it shows that there was a loss of $28.4 million and a tax shift of $4,600,000. That was actuals for the 05-07, and we try to forecast, but that's those are actuals for that year. And Mr. McDonald is correct. The $1 billion that's shown in this report reflects the assessed value that is reduced. And then what we use typically is an average tax rate statewide. And the average tax rate statewide is just in excess of $15 per thousand, which is typically made up of the $5 limit for schools, and which is, you know, education service district, community colleges, and K-12, and then the $10 limit, which is the Measure 5 limit on general government activities. The rates, I probably would have to agree with Mr. O'Reilly, although I don't know from personal experience what the rates in Curry County are, but I suspect they are in the range that he's discovered. So the average around the state is about $15. Is there any specific questions I could answer?
Mr. Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my first question is ask John to go back and give us, out of your tax expenditure report, what was the cost of this existing program in 03-04?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, I brought just the page from this 07-09 biennium. It goes back only to 05-07 in this page. I don't have that with me, but I could certainly bring that or get you that information.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Give me 05-07 predicted as right now.
The predicted is not in this report, but the actuals are in this report. I did read the predicted, and I talked with Mr. Keller about it, and I think it was in the $13 million range.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
If you'll recollect, you're bringing back bad memories, John. If you'll recollect last session in revenue, we had serious discussions. We actually had three different property tax bills that we ran through, and the total fiscal impact of the three property tax bills, if I recall correctly, was about $3.1 million in lost revenue. Does that ring a bell to you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, specific ones, we had quite a few.
Paul, Mr. Chair. Well, we had quite a few, but the fact of the matter is that we rolled them all up into one tax package at the end of the session. And if I recall correctly, the loss was $3.1 million at that time. I also recall that the cities and counties signed on and agreed to it. I don't see a representative of the city and counties in the chamber. And so I'm a little bit curious of why legislative revenue last time came up with a $3.1 million impact, when the fact of the difference last time was $6,230 in exemption. This time it would be $7,000. So how we could jump from $3.1 million to a potential $31 million difference is frankly surprising to me. And, Mr. Chair, I'd request that we get an opinion out of legislative revenue, because these numbers, I won't go there, Mr. Chair. I'll just say these numbers are not accurate.
Okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Boquist's request. These numbers are difficult to wrestle with, and particularly in the format that they're presented here. I think I'm probably needing to take a fault for raising this question, but I'm simply concerned about the impact of local government. All of the folks that are limited in their ability to raise revenue and must keep their services going off of the property tax basis. And I'm simply trying to get a feel for how many veterans would fall into the qualification were the exemption raised to $25,000 or, as has been suggested here, $50,000. Now, how many individuals would then qualify? That's a combination, just a minute, with the veterans that's going to need to come from the Veterans Department, and then get us some kind of a perspective look at what sort of impact that would have on property tax revenues. I'm not really interested in getting into what assessed values are and those sorts of things. I think we need to find a way to get at
this is what we changed last session.
An idea of what the impact is, and maybe that's a difficult question. And secondly, I think I would just like to pose a question of, in these various proposed exemptions, are we putting any kind of income eligibility into the whole scenario as well? An individual may be qualified for a exemption on their property tax assessment by virtue of simply having a particular qualification, such as being a veteran. I think it's also important to look at whether there's a limitation if people make, have over a certain income eligibility, whether or not that's a wise investment. So those are the kinds of questions I'd like to find somebody be able to get us a little bit of a picture of.
Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I really have to share my curiosity with what Representative Boquist is saying here, and I'd like to get the answers, too.
I will get them.
Representative Barker, Representative Cohen, I don't think there'll be much of an increase in veterans, because I think, except for those veterans coming back from overseas today, as far as the counties and the cities of the state of Oregon, they're building at such a rate that they're getting more income than they ever had before. And if you take Salem, for example, I live in West Salem. They built 4,000 houses in the last 2.5 years over there. So their income has jumped tremendously, and I think it'd have little or no effect on the city of Salem.
Mr.
Now,
Chair,
how would it be for otherwise? I don't know.
Follow up. With all due respect, we need to bring in the assessment and revenue process into this, because simply building does not necessarily equate to increase in revenues for cities and counties. It's a very complex system, and one needs to understand it, and it's important that we not just lay that out there as absolute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to back up my former county commissioner and colleague. That building, yeah, you get more property tax on it, but there's also services that go along with that, and it does not equate to more money in the ending balance. It doesn't. Oftentimes, it ends up less. So that's not there's not a direct correlation there at all, and it is complex, and it is kind of confusing. But I just don't think that's necessarily the case. With all due respect.
Mr. Chair, before we melt down here, I think all of the answers to Representative Cowan's questions were actually brought up last time. I think a simple request of LRO, and they could update those figures and actually bring it back and explain it very well. Because they have all the data by numbers and everything else, and it would be really easy. But I was shocked by, frankly, Mr. Chair, looking at these numbers, considering the fact that that Representative Hunt and I were involved in the negotiations for this, and we were capped at $3.1 million that we could spend, frankly, the cities and counties' money in this program last time around. And we had three separate bills, and this is only one-third of it. And so I think the numbers in here need to be evaluated by legislative revenue and brought back to us.
Okay. And with that, having that being said, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2398. I'm sorry, I said that wrong, didn't I? 2938.
I did that.
And we'll talk to the legislative revenue office and try to get some numbers so we have a little more accurate impression. Okay. Work session. Yeah. We open a work session on House Bill 3199. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3199 to be referred to the House Committee on Education with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Boquist moves House Bill 3199 to be referred to the House Committee on Education with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue.
Are there any objections? So ordered. Open a work session on House Bill 3200. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3200 be referred to the House Committee on Education with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Boquist moves House Bill 3200 to be referred to the House Committee on Education with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Are there any objections? So moved. That concludes our business day. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to let the committee know that I just received word that another young soldier from Lincoln County, Toledo, has died of the injuries that he received in Iraq a week ago. Nick Leitner, age 29, has been in a hospital in Washington, D.C., and he has died of his injuries.
Thank you for that sad information.